League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So, Porky, here we are. Christmas has come and gone. The new year is looming.
It is.
We've got lots to talk about coming up over the next few months, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You've been studying your journals, I
know. Listen, talking about Christmas coming and going, right? I read an incredible report over the festive period about a woman who's in our trade. She's actually a print journalist.
Oh, yeah.
And... I mean, everybody gets stressed at Christmas, right? You've got to buy... You know, my mum's always ringing up, in the weeks leading up to Christmas. Yeah. What do you want for a present?
Yes.
All that. Everybody gets stressed out.
Yeah.
And then particularly one of my sisters then, you know, obviously hosts Christmas. Yes. It alternates between the two of them. Yeah. I've got two sisters, both lovely ladies, and both put it on her. But this lady I'm talking about, her name is Rachel Kelly. She wrote a piece before Christmas, which I only picked up on over the holiday.
Yeah.
She had a complete nervous breakdown organising Christmas at home.
Right.
Complete nervous breakdown.
Well, you know what I think people are now doing? People are becoming much more kind of all-consuming, and they think they have to do everything. You know, because it's no longer the case, and we've talked about this in many walks of life before.
Yes.
Where, you know, I remember Christmas dinner with my parents, where we didn't have much, particularly.
Yes.
And you'd be quite happy. We always had a capon. We never had turkey as a kid. I don't know why
capon,
that was.
Capon's that little bird?
It's like a small chicken.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
we
okay,
always had
a
capon.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was something to do with being Scottish or my father being particularly, impecunious or not wanting to spend
too much money.
Yeah,
or different to everybody else. Because he liked to be different to everybody else,
But we never had that whole kind of, you know, we had a bit of stuffing.
Yeah.
We had some roast potatoes. We had a bit of gravy. We never had the massive Christmas.
We
just didn't have it. I think he always believed that hogmanay was a bigger thing.
Right.
And so to me, Christmas
Well, Scots people do, don't they?
Yeah. Christmas is always nice, but it was never so overblown as it is now, where you read people going, oh, yeah, we've got 20 people coming for Christmas dinner.
Yes.
I mean, you can't do that at home.
Well,
you just can't.
You say that. Now, this lady, I read this fantastic piece. She says, for several weeks leading up to Christmas, and this wasn't Christmas this year, by the way, it was a couple of years ago, she said, I'd been ignoring the warning signs. I was heading for a serious anxiety-driven depressive episode.
Blimey.
As the nights darkened, so did my mood. I began to suffer from creeping insomnia.
Right.
The tinsel and turkey to-do list seemed to get longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
I was worrying about everything from the Christmas pudding to finding the right presents. I was then in my late 30s, trying to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
I snapped. I went back over the same worries again and again, like a skater who carves ever deeper patterns in the ice. My high anxiety levels, brought on by stress, worsened with the end of the year deadlines and expectations in my business life. It was while hosting a Christmas party at our house in West London that I and all the plates I was spinning finally crashed.
Oh,
literally dropped all the plates.
What, she literally had to go into some kind of rehab centre in order to recover?
Part of me didn't want to host a party that year. I knew it was wobbly, but mad as it now sounds, I didn't feel I could call it off because we had it was an annual event and we had over a dozen guests.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I said 20, but actually... A dozen people for dinner is an absolute and utter nightmare.
Absolutely.
So ridiculous.
Yeah.
You cannot cook food
unless
you run a restaurant for that many people.
That's right, I mean, she said that it came just before serving the main lunch.
Mm.
I paused to sit down in the kitchen, piled high with canapes we were serving. Canapes? Canapes, yeah.
Have you not seen that scene from Godfather 2? You know, when the guys all move out to Nevada.
Yes.
And the guy, I can't remember his name, but he's, I think it's Salonzo or somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, you know, Michael, you play your Dimanche with, you know, Joel so-and-so, and he goes, I came here and you mean a can of peas, a can of peas with a sausage and peppers and all this, you know.
Yeah.
And he can't pronounce canapes properly or can of peas.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Can of peas, these are can of peas.
Right, okay. Anyway, burst into tears, weeping and all that. I mean, that's terrible, you know, and you
well,
think
Well, I think
to yourself,
a lot of women put themselves under this kind of pressure, though, because women tend to, regardless of whether you think that we live in an equal society and men will do their share, most women will think that it's their job to make Christmas dinner, right?
Yeah.
Whether it be somebody capable of doing it or somebody not.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hate to have to organise a Christmas dinner.
And
I've never had to do it.
Well, because I've got two sisters, whichever house it's in, the other always helps, of course. So that sort of, you know, splits
it. But also your sisters are very well organised.
Yeah, very well organised, yeah.
And they're very good at whatever all of that is. But
that's
I'd love to watch you trying to make a Christmas dinner.
Well, just to do this year, it was great. It was down in Bournemouth and it was
super. Yeah, but imagine you trying to do it.
Well, I would, you know, I tell you
take
something.
Take a step back from reality.
I tell you something funny. Right. Do you remember a couple of weeks before Christmas, there was this daft story going around saying loneliness should now be treated as an affliction and a disease all this kind of stuff, right? And, and then I read, like, Liz Jones.
I wander as lonely as a cloud.
Yeah, that's right. I wander lonely as a cloud that floats on high or vales and hills. When all at once I saw a crowd, a host of dancing daffodils.
Hey, by the way, I didn't tell you.
Along the lake, beneath the breeze, they fluttered gaily in the trees.
I've been having a row, by the way, I haven't told you this, on Twitter, with a poet.
Oh, yeah.
I've been getting trolled by
kind
a poet.
Kind of a poet, is he?
His name is Mike somebody. I think it might be Mike Gary or something. But I don't know if you remember, just before Christmas, a couple of weeks before Christmas, Match of the Day 2. I'll tell you what it was. It was the weekend of the two big derbies.
Oh, all right,
Manchester United, Manchester City. And Everton
glorious draw at Anfield.
The glorious draw were there. Mm. No shots on goal apart from the penalty.
That's right, yeah.
But the night of that Sunday, because it was both on a Sunday, the games were on, Match of the Day 2 was on, right? And it opened with this bloke, you know, who was obviously from Manchester.
Yeah,
that game is afoot. You know, it was always bollocks about, you know.
Was it a poem?
Yeah, it was a poem.
So was it like a Northern working class poem?
Yeah, you know, like, oh, you know, get your paintings
in
out
in the shadow of the slug heaps.
L.S. Lowry and all that bollocks, you know. Anyway, so I tweeted out quite innocently, you know, what a load of old cobblers this is, you know. Match of the Day 2, clearly showing complete and utter disdain for most working class football fans.
Yes.
You know, poetry and football don't mix, right?
Absolutely.
Now, a week later, the poet, who obviously is not very good on Twitter, came back at me and was like, you know, stereotypical, you work for a tabloid newspaper and a radio station.
You don't appreciate
no wonder you don't appreciate poetry.
Yeah.
And all these other tossers joined in, going, you know, how terrible is it? You think working class people don't like poetry?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not what I said.
No.
I said poetry and football, I don't think mix.
Yeah.
I don't
need
to be pretentious about it.
Okay.
You complete twats.
Yeah, no, you know? that's shocking.
But, you know, this whole idea that, you know, poetry is a wonderful thing to establish football.
Yes.
You know, really? I don't think so.
But that's a bit of an anti-Northern story, isn't it? Because you're very anti-Northern.
I'm not anti-Northern. You accuse me of this all the time.
You are
absolutely wrong. I have many, many friends in the North. Many
people.
I don't
think you do. I think you've got some friends in Scotland, which is another country.
No, I've got loads of friends in Scotland.
And Wales, which is another country.
I also have friends in the North of England.
No, I don't
and the people
you.
Who understand
where?
Me.
Where?
The people who understand me know that's where my heart is, in the whole of Britain.
Where are your friends in the North of England?
I'm not telling you where they are.
You haven't got any.
Yeah, I have. I've got more friends in the North than you've got.
I've known you 35 years. You've never mentioned a friend in the North of England.
Mentioned,
you're lying.
No, you don't.
You're
lying. There's only one of us who's in here is a liar, right?
No, no.
We had this conversation a few weekends ago.
Not at all.
When you said to me, oh, I've known you 35 years. You've never told me you can play the violin.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
Popeye.
Yeah.
I can play the violin.
No, you can't.
Yes,
you said
I can.
You used to be able to play the violin, but you can't now.
Yeah, well.
I made a very good joke about that, didn't I?
Yeah, no.
I said, you put a violin under your chin. Which of your chins would you put it under?
Well, considering that you've got the biggest fucking chin in Christendom.
Oh, that's
I'm not quite surprised.
It's a family show. This,
the show. No, this
can
is
you,
not a family
stop,
show.
Stop
this
getting,
is audio boom, and we can swear if we want.
Anyway, I want to tell you about the North, okay? Because
yeah,
I love the North. Yeah. I'm a Northern boy.
Well, why'd you leave it then?
Well, I had to pursue my career,
really?
But I should be going back there.
Yeah, you should.
And it might be sooner than you think,
well,
okay?
Well, I think you're probably right, because I think your career's gone about as far as it can.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it? Yeah. But anyway, listen.
We're supposed to be doing a big show in the North of England at some point. Maybe the next show we do will be in my favourite second city of Manchester.
Oh, yeah? Your favourite second city of Manchester?
Yeah.
Why
not?
Yeah. How often do you go to Manchester?
Well, I've been there, I would say, twice.
Yeah, in the last
both
5
times,
years.
Both times to do a show at the Lowry Theatre
in
Salford, and to do one at the Dance House.
At the Dance House,
which
that's
was
right,
very nice too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, let me tell you, I've come across a report, you know, by studying my journals, which says that actually it is grim up north, and that's not just a, you know, a sort of
well, of
fallacy.
Course it's grim. I mean, every time you see a weather report down here that says, you know, Not much snow in the southeast. Yeah. There's loads of snow in the north.
Yeah, but listen, you won't believe this.
No, they probably reckon, won't.
They reckon that the coal mining industry actually puts so much pollution into the air, and most of it was based in the north of England.
Well, what about Nottingham?
No, no, hang on. That's the Midlands. That it's still coming down with the rain and making people depressed.
What, acid rain?
Not acid rain, but like smudgy.
Purple rain?
No. Coal dust rain.
Coal dust
rain. It's still
rain.
Raining in the north
rubbish.
Of England.
That's
no,
rubbish.
No, it does.
Well, when was the last time coal dust went up to the sky?
No, it comes down. It's sitting around in
the
heavens.
It comes down, first has to go up.
Yeah, but it comes down with the clouds of rain.
No,
all
what
kind
I'm
of
saying
stuff.
Is when was the last pollution from coal going up?
Because 25 years
people
ago,
haven't
probably.
Burned coal for a long time.
Probably 25 years ago.
Although, did I tell you, when I first moved into the house that flooded in Wiltshire,
yes.
There was a big coal bunker there, right?
Right.
Right next to the garage.
It was full of coal.
It was full of coal.
Really?
It was fantastic.
That was a present,
I mean,
it
was smokeless coal, but it was very, very warm. And you stuck that on the top of the fire, and it was fantastic.
Well, let me tell you, this is this study, right, into the psychology of residents of former coal mining regions has found out that actually, because coal dust got into the systems of their grandfathers and their grandmothers and all that, it's been passed down during the generations and gives them a feeling of grimness.
Grimness.
Grimness,
are
yeah.
you saying that if people in, say, 1960s...
Yeah.
had children, that the children they had somehow inherited the
coal dust.
The coal dust in life. Rubbish.
No, the coal dust effect.
That's
no,
bollocks.
I'm telling you, listen to this.
Not buying it.
The research paper suggests that the soot black rain of the Industrial Revolution still falls on the descendants of of its first workers, fating them to be grumpy, anxious and depressed. Seriously.
I'm not buying it.
Seriously.
What about people that suffer from vibration white finger? Because this was a thing that I used to find...
A lot of people got that.
In South Wales. No, when I was working in Wales.
They used to have adverts in the paper, didn't they? Claim for vibration white finger.
It was before the old PPI box,
that's
right?
Yeah.
It was always on the back page of the tabloids, you know. Yeah. Do you suffer from vibration white finger?
Yeah.
And I actually ended up getting involved in some class action suit.
Yeah.
Because I used to meet a lot of people in South Wales whose fathers and grandfathers had worked down in the mines. And of course, you got that from holding on to the... Oh, excuse me, I've just hit the microphone.
Yeah.
You got that from holding on to the drill.
That was going into the coal face.
You know, doing it for 12 hours a day.
That's
not
right.
surprising you'd suffer from vibration white finger.
No, he's absolutely right.
I had terrible sympathy for them.
Yeah, well, so did I. Anyway...
You've never had sympathy for anyone in your life.
And by the way, that PPI thing is now running out. And so they've invented some other new...
No, it hasn't. No, because they now do these adverts where they go... And of course, everybody knows that the deadline's coming soon in 2019.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's nearly 2 years away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. Have you ever tried to find out if you had...
Well, do you know, only once, when I had this weird relationship with my bank, where they decided that because I was a black customer, that I should have...
Sorry, what's a black customer?
Well, it means that you're part of the elite. You'd love it. You
hate
it. Remember when I showed you my
black
card?
You were always in the red. Most of the time, I've known
that's
you.
That's not true. Incorrect.
Since you came back to England.
No, that's rubbish. No, I was in the red briefly because you made me lose the house that I had a million pounds
invested
in.
You should have rented it to somebody else.
No, well, I should have rented it to somebody trustworthy instead of fucking you.
Yeah, well,
the bottom line was I came back to Britain with no money because I couldn't get rid of the apartment. And it cost me $5,000.
That was a deal between the Daily Express and you. Nothing to do with me.
Well, then maybe I should take it up with them.
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah. Anyway, you know as well as I do. You were in the wrong. However... the point is that they said to me, and I met this woman, right? She rings me up. She goes, "I'm your new relationship advisor."
Oh, yeah.
And I said, "That's very nice. I don't really need one of those."
Yeah.
And she went, No, I don't mean
unless
that.
Unless you want to come round and sort of talk about it.
Let's just lie down over there. I said, "No, that's just some kind
that's
of, you know." I said, "I don't need any help on that front." She said, No, banking relationship. And I went, all right then.
Yeah.
So we met. She said,
went to the bank to see her?
No. I said, I haven't got time to go. I said, "Where are you based?" She said, "I'm based in Fenchurch Street."
Right.
Now, anyone who knows London will tell you, Fenchurch Street is a very difficult place to get to.
Yeah, of course it is. Especially no tube stations.
Yeah, especially from where I am.
Yeah.
So I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll meet you in Canary Wharf," right?
Yeah.
So she meets me in Canary Wharf for a coffee.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is great.
Yeah.
Because before that, you'd always have to go and see the bank manager.
Yeah.
My bank had been, since the age of 18, NatWest in Hampstead,
right?
Which no longer exists.
Right.
They get rid of it.
Right.
So, so I go and meet her, and she was terrific. And she said, "Well, do you have any needs?" Mm. You know, and I'm like, "Well, what kind of needs do you like me to talk about?"
No, you see, you're getting smutty now,
no,
aren't you?
No, I'm not. Right? No, I know. But
this is
a very
respectable young lady, a professional.
Very civilised, right? Anyway, so I'm going to laugh at this story, which you'll probably think is the wrong time to laugh.
Right, right.
Because we had a very profitable meeting, fruitful.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, she said, do you need any pension help? I said, no, I've got some pensions going on. She said, well, I think it'd be happy, it'd be useful if we meet up like once every 3 months.
Right.
Anyway, about the next week, right, something went wrong.
Right.
And something happened at the bank that I needed to sort out. Mm. I ring up to talk to this woman, and she's not there.
Right.
So I said, well, can I leave a message for her? Yes. Leave a message. I don't hear from her. Another week goes by. They said, perhaps you'd like to send her an email. So I sent her an email. Another 2 weeks goes by. I never hear from this woman again.
Right.
About the fourth week, right? This obviously wasn't anything desperate, but it was something I needed to sort out. They came back and said, oh, we're terribly sorry. Whatever her name was, has taken off the rest of the year. Well, why? And they said, well, she's had she's had a death in the family.
Oh, dear.
And I went, well, so?
What's
sorry.
What's that got to do with my relationship?
What's that got to do with me? Who do I have a relationship with now?
Yeah,
and exactly, apparently her father had died, right? And she took the rest of the fucking year off. And I never heard from her again. So I met her once. That was it. It's the only meeting I ever had with anyone at the bank.
That reminds me, seriously, of a similar story, which is just as good. I went to the Isle of Wight, you know, and took my sister and brother-in-law because it was their anniversary or something, you know. Okay. And I said, and when you get over to
Ticket
the Isle of Wight.
Ticket to ride and all that.
Sorry?
Ticket to ride.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to get over to the Isle of Wight, one of the.
Did you go on the hovercraft?
Went on the Fast Cat.
No, yeah.
There's three ways of getting there. You go on the slow boat, which has got all the cars on, or you go on the Fast Cat, or which is, you know, like the James Bond one, or you go on the hovercraft, which is
swim.
Noisy.
Four
well, you could, but you'd never get there. Certainly I wouldn't, anyway.
No.
So, and when you land, there's this very old-fashioned London tube train, which takes you...
I've been on that,
You've been on that,
do you know what
it
is? I think it's an old Bakerloo line.
That's right, yeah, I think it is,
It's fantastic.
And that takes you up to the sort of, you know, right up to town. Yeah,
downtown ride.
And that, yeah, that's right. Then we got a cab, and we go round to a very famous hotel. I think it's called Sea Houses. You know, in fact, I think Sea Houses is the town.
Isn't there a house there that the Queen Mother used to always stay on, somewhere near there?
No, Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria used to have a place there, right? So we get this cab, we go around there, you know, and so it's fantastic, you know, lovely. And they've got a public bar in this great hotel, and then the restaurant is at the back, you know. And so they in the bar, we said, we'll have a couple of drinks, please. Yes, the waitress will come through and take your order. So, oh, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. So we had a few drinks and ordered the food. So then, anyway, another woman then comes through and says, oh, we'd like to show you to your table. That's fantastic. Thank you. So we go around into the restaurant. We were the only people in the restaurant, right? I don't know why it was such a quiet day. So
time of year was this then?
This was like September, something like that. You know, September, October, I think they got married, you know. So it's end of season, I suppose. So we're sitting there and we've still got our drinks. And after about 20 minutes, you know, we thought, something eerie about this place. You know, we're the only people in the restaurant. Nobody's come back to check on our order or offer us any starters or anything like that. So I said, well, I'll go and find out. So I went back into the hotel. I couldn't find a receptionist on there. So I went to the bar. I said, oh, hello. I said, do you remember us? And I said, oh, you're in the restaurant, aren't you? I said, yeah. I said, but we've been sitting there for 25 minutes. I said, there's nobody else in the restaurant. And I said, we haven't seen our waitress. He said, oh, I'm terribly sorry. Yeah. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we've closed the restaurant. I said, what are you talking about?
Well, since you got in there.
He said, we've closed the restaurant. I said, what are you talking about? I said, what about the waitress who took us our order?
Yeah.
He said, oh, I'm afraid she became very ill. We had to send her home. So we closed the restaurant. I said, but you didn't come in and tell us. It was ridiculous.
Well, I mean, the Isle of Wight is the land that time forgot.
Well, it can
incredible.
Be, yeah.
I've got another story very similar to that. But let's just stop for a moment and have a listen to this.
Okay.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Right, so getting back to places in Britain, right, the north of England, I haven't told you about my northern report yet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I want to tell you about
northern report. Well, no, you told me it's grim up north.
No.
They're all suffering from black lung or something.
This report says the Industrial Revolution... Yeah, that's about right, yeah. The Industrial Revolution is arguably one of the most influential and formative epochs in modern history, says Jason Rentfrau.
Jason Rentboy.
No, no. Well, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? Do you have to be so malign and insulting?
Well, Rentfrau means rent woman, doesn't it?
No, it's not Frau, F-R-A-U. It's F-R-O-W.
Okay. That's a strange name.
Right,
it?
Yeah. From Cambridge University.
Okay.
Who says, those who live in a post-industrial landscape still do so in the shadow of coal. Internally.
See, I don't believe that.
Internally as well as externally.
See, I cannot accept that you can actually pass on a disease of the lung.
Yes.
Genetically.
I think you can.
No, I don't think so.
Well, how do you think I got my heart condition?
Well, from drinking too much,
no,
I imagine.
My father passed it on to me. He died of...
his final act.
That's right, yeah. He died of dilated cardiomyopathy, which is exactly
what
I've got.
Though, at the time, did
No, he didn't know at the time, no. But he passed it on to me. But anyway, here you are. This is one last paragraph here.
Yeah, but that's different. I mean, heart disease can be transferred, and you can inherit that, in the same way that you can inherit a genetic condition.
Yeah.
What I don't think you can inherit is black lung. I don't think you can inherit it.
Well, look, it says here, by looking at almost 400,000 personality tests...
Yeah.
The prof, I've just told you about,
Red
Jason Rentfrau, said he found that people living in former industrial heartlands, such as Blaenau in Gwent,
Blaenau,
which you'll know about,
yes,
Blaenau Ffestiniog.
No, Blaenau Ffestiniog, I think, it's somewhere else.
It is, yeah, it is, yeah. Blaenau
Gwent. North.
And the Ceredigion in South Wales.
Ceredigion.
And Hartlepool.
Yeah.
Terrible place, Hartlepool.
Hartlepool, yeah. That's where they've got the monkey statue, isn't it?
That's right, because they hung a monkey. Yeah, that's right. For being a spy of the French.
Yeah. They're very cruel people.
That's right. He said it showed that people had negative personality traits. As well as being more depressed, they were more impulsive, neurotic, poor at planning, less satisfied with their lives, and less conscientious.
What, this is Hartlepudlians?
This is people in those three towns I've just mentioned, and northern people.
I don't
people.
See how they can conclude that. That is absolute rubbish. It's got to be biased, that information. This bloke from Cambridge, Rentboy, right?
Yeah.
What right does he have to say that about the people from Hartlepool?
Because he concludes that it's a legacy of the first people who moved to towns in Wales and northern England seeking work in mines and factories. Mm. The common factor amongst all these people is examined is that they're forefathers, right? Their distant relatives worked down mines, okay?
Yeah, but hang on. I mentioned Nottingham to you before. I mean, some of the biggest mines in the world are underneath the territory of Nottingham, the county, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Now,
that
is not the north of England. How can you have done it without mentioning Nottingham?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps people in Nottingham had a better attitude towards coal mining, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because remember, during the great miners' strike, right, you know, led by Arthur Scargill, Nottingham miners didn't go on strike.
Right.
Maybe they were a better class of miner.
That was the big problem, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We have to be careful about making value judgments, of course, on people who may or may not have been on strike or who may have decided to stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder with their colleagues as part of the revolution.
Yeah, now, there's somebody here defending your position. It says, other psychologists are more cautious about this theory.
Mm.
Unless you started with the belief that these psychological factors are inherited, you could not interpret the findings as supporting a genetic or inherited explanation, says Tony Cassidy.
Mm.
How many Cassidys do we know?
I know a lot of Cassidys.
David?
There was David Cassidy. John Cassidy used to work for the Sunday Times, now works for the New Yorker magazine in America. There were two Cassidys in New York who were subsequently made... editor and deputy editor of the Sunday Mail.
Oh, really?
Tom Cassidy, I think, was one of them.
Okay.
He wasn't any good.
Tony Cassidy, I'm talking about, is a professor of child and family health psychology at Ulster University.
Ulster, yeah.
He argued that the findings were far more likely to be linked to the present state of the economy.
Well, I'd prefer to go with him than Rentboy, to be honest, from Cambridge. Your man from Ulster, I think, is where I'm putting my particular bag of coal on this one.
Yeah. Craig Morgan of King's College London says what they seem to have found is an association between certain personality traits and areas dominated by the coal industry. To make the next leap and suggest the nature of the coal industry set in stone those personality traits seems a stretch to me.
No, I think
And that's
so.
From the prof. His name is Professor Morgan.
That's like saying that people are, you know, people who are perhaps not as well off.
Yeah.
As other people are a bit more depressed than the people who are. I mean, I read a survey the other day in which it said that actually people who are wealthy are not as happy as people who are poor. I mean, what a lot of cobblers that is.
No, it's a big responsibility being wealthy.
Well, you say that.
Well, you can get anxiety about whether you're going to lose your wealth or not.
Well, why though? What's the point of being wealthy if all you do is worry about losing it?
You know that song in Eliza Doolittle, the film,
My Fair Lady?
Yeah. All I want is a room somewhere Far away from the morning air.
Far away from the cold night air.
Cold night air.
Yeah.
One table, one chair, one fire, a ward.
Wouldn't it be lovely? Lovely. Yeah.
Right. Now, you see, she was quite happy because...
Did not Stanley Holloway sing that in the movie?
No, a woman did, didn't she?
Eliza Doolittle.
Was it Audrey Hepburn?
It was Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Well, I thought it was Stanley Holloway.
No. Anyway, so my thinking is that if that's all you want in life, it's a bit like being a sort of hopeless drunk, isn't it?
I don't know, what's that like?
I don't know, but what I'm saying is...
Sorry, walked right into that one.
No, I've often thought about becoming a hopeless drunk.
Well, I think you're halfway there, to be fair. Yeah.
You know. Because of the lack of responsibility for... It's like
being a junkie. No. If you're a junkie, all you care about is where your next fix is coming from.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You don't give a shit about what effect you're having on anybody
else. That's what I'm saying. Hopeless drunkenness only means where can I nick my next bottle of wine from, right?
Exactly.
And then get it down your throat.
And you don't give a shit about the consequences either.
No, get it down your throat. And then, of course, you drift into oblivion.
Yeah.
And so if you wake up on a pavement at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's okay because the previous 6 hours didn't matter to you.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean?
And the next 6 hours only count if you can find another bottle of wine.
Exactly. That's right. Break into an off license or something like that.
Well, our good friend Mike O'Regan used to talk about the Aboriginals in Australia.
Yes.
Where apparently in Sydney at one point or other, there was a park which the Aboriginals used to drink in.
Right.
Because unfortunately, like many of the kind of...
Native population.
The native populations, like the Native Americans in America, you know, they hadn't quite absolved themselves and managed to get used to sort of modern culture. And many of them had become alcoholics, right?
Right, yeah, they did. It's a terribly sad story.
It's a terribly sad story, but I remember him saying that, you know, some local council decided they wanted to bulldoze this park and put up a massive skyscraper, right?
Right, yeah.
And the elder fathers of the Aboriginals said, no, you can't do this. It's a sacred burying ground.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And in fact, anything they were burying were the massive flagons of wine
that's
that
right,
they were
empty
drinking
bottles.
Every day.
Yeah, that's
empty
right, yeah.
bottles. But they kept this fight up for years and years and years and said, no, you can't touch our secret burial ground.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was not a secret burial ground at all. It was a place where they used to lie on benches and get shit-faced.
That's right, yeah, you know, absolutely.
I'm sorry to put too fine a point
where
there,
they
but
felt
that was it.
Home about it. And that's what I mean. You're hopeless drunk, you've got nothing to lose. Now, if you make something of your life, I mean, you know, I often think to myself... could I do without a 50-inch TV that's got Netflix on it? You know what I mean?
Well, you've only just learned how to work
Netflix.
I have. Answer is yes, you could, actually.
Yeah, but I don't want to in the future and all this kind of stuff, you know? And I remember, we've talked about this before, actually, so just briefly, but I remember Dave Stewart, he invented...
Paradise Syndrome.
Exactly, he invented the expression Paradise Syndrome, where he said, I've got everything that I want in life. I've got a great marriage, I've got great children, I've got a great career, I've got loads of money. And the Paradise Syndrome problem is something will go wrong.
Yeah.
Now, I mean...
But did he not have Paradise Syndrome to the point where he said he was so happy that actually he's now bored? Did he not say that?
Yeah, I think that comes into it.
Yeah.
I think that comes into it. When I once took a respite from broadcasting, I thought, that's easy.
Yeah.
I installed a few properties and I'm just going to live my life out as I want.
Yeah.
And then it became so intolerably boring.
Yeah.
When you wake up in the morning, you've got to have some target for that day, some ambition, something to
do. But that can be a target somewhere. That you can invent, though, isn't it? I mean, you could have
Yeah, but it's not
target.
As important if you invent it. It's more important if the necessity of factors around you make you have to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Because if you didn't have to go to work and you could just say to yourself, all right, my target today is to drive to Canterbury, park my car, check into a very expensive hotel, have a lovely lunch, and then fall into bed and sleep for the rest of the day.
Yes.
I mean, I can see how day after day after day, day after day, that would cease to become interesting.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, if your day is only driven by other people and you go, well, I have to get on the train to get to work so that somebody can give me a hard time about what I'm
doing
and tell me I'm not doing it right.
Yeah.
That's not very much fun either.
Well, it's not, but at least it's a challenge.
I mean, luckily for you, you don't have to make that choice because you're wealthy enough to not have to work.
Not true. Doesn't matter how wealthy you are if you want to work.
No. No, you don't have to work, is my point.
Yeah.
Many people who have to work would love to be where you are. Because they'd say, well, you know, how great would that be?
I accept part of your resolution, and that is that I can choose what work I want to do.
Yes.
And many people can't, because many people have to do the
work
they're allocated.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because that's all they've got in life. Yeah, I accept that.
But, you know, I mean, basically, the sort of the, what you might call the anxiety of the wealthy is a load of old bollocks, actually, because what it is proof that you have actually passed the point of realisation and passed the point of reality.
Yeah.
Because you're actually worried about something that most people never get the chance to worry about.
No, that's true. But don't you think Bill Gates worries that with his enormous fortune of $40 billion, Is he giving it to the right sort of charities?
Yeah, maybe.
They give away billions, yeah. The foundation of
well, my
him
sister
and his
in
wife.
The past has done work with the Bill Gates Foundation right. And I, you know, managed yeah. Some of their money for them.
Yes.
And it's a very well-run organisation. It's sure. Not as though Bill Gates just sits there going, no, no. Oh, I'm going to write a cheque. No. I mean, he employs hundreds of people
that's right, yeah.
In this foundation.
Yeah, right? That's right.
And they help thousands, millions of people in Africa,
yes.
In other poor parts of the world.
Yes.
I think you're either somebody who worries about stuff or you don't.
Yeah.
I mean, you worry about stuff. I don't worry about stuff.
Yeah, I've always worried about stuff, yeah. And you've never worried about no, stuff. For some unknown reason, you have this incredible optimism that it'll all come right in the end.
Yeah, I know.
Even though it you haven't got a clue how that's going to happen.
It doesn't always go
no,
that way.
Doesn't always go
but,
that
I mean,
way.
But, I mean, I take the view there's no yeah. Point in worrying about stuff yeah. You have no control over.
No, I totally agree. You know I'll mean? Tell you about one guy who lost control of it all, okay?
Yeah.
This guy is called Wu Yongging.
Wu Yongging.
Wu Yongging.
Okay.
Okay.
He's not from Pyongyang.
He's not from Pyongyang, but he's from the Far East. He's... Now, what this guy does is he's 26, right? And.
He's not the Bitcoin bloke, is he?
No, he's not the Bitcoin bloke. What he does is he climbs buildings without oh, yeah. Safety equipment.
Oh, yes.
And tries to get, you know, to the highest yeah, yeah. Buildings in the
free
world.
Free climbing. There's a French guy that does that as well, isn't there?
There is a French guy that does it, yeah. Unfortunately, Wu Yongging is now retired.
I thought you were going to say died.
He did. He fell off a building.
Oh.
That's the same in his job. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what happened was he lost his grip. He's only 26, by the way.
That's a shocking story, this.
Yeah, he lost his grip.
You don't want to bring the mood of the room down,
No. I'm just telling you, we're comparing people's lives, okay? Yeah. So I'm giving you an example
here. Well, I
suppose
he would have wanted to go that way.
Well, would he? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, if you climb buildings without any ropes,
yeah.
That's a pretty dangerous way to make your living.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
Right? So you've got to know... The yeah. Way that your world may end
yes.
Is you're going to fall off.
Yes, that's true. Do you remember at the start of one of those Mission Impossible films, Tom Cruise, who always has to make himself the central hero of every film he's in, doesn't he?
Well, he's a bit like you, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, no, I wouldn't
I mean,
say that.
You put yourself at the centre of everything.
No, that's not fair.
You've seen the time, by the way.
Yeah, do you remember he climbed up the outside of a
do you know,
mountain,
I'm
didn't he?
I'm not a massive fan of Mission Impossible films, so I don't know them that well. I watched the last one and actually thought it was really good.
Yeah, okay.
But it's the first one I've watched that I've actually enjoyed.
Okay.
You know?
But anyway, get very briefly to this. Wu Yongging, right? He lost his grip on the Huayan Hu Center in Changsha, capital of the Hunan province in southern China.
Uh-huh.
Police confirmed his death after video footage apparently showed him falling.
Really?
Somebody else had been filming it and posted it online anonymously. He had more than a million followers.
That's awful, isn't it?
He had more than a million followers on social media platform Weibo.
Yeah.
He starred in online advertisements on his own site. And that's how he funded himself, by climbing up buildings and getting people to click in and watch him, right?
Yeah.
Fans had feared for his safety since his social media channels went quiet a few weeks before his death was announced.
Oh, God.
So nobody actually quite knows when he kind of died.
Right.
But the footage emerged of a man dangling from the side of a skyscraper who then lost his grip, and it's only just now been confirmed it was this boy.
What a terrible way to die. Did it tell you how high up he was?
Well, he was at the top of a very, very tall building, so obviously he got smashed to pieces, the poor lad.
Yeah.
You know, it's... here it goes. It says he also used to raise money by entering into roof-topping competitions, where sponsors would put up an average of £11,300 prize money to climb up buildings against each other.
It's not much, is it?
No, it's not. But I mean, opposed to that part of the world, maybe it is.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, thanks for lowering the.
Well, you know, I like a broad brush stroke approach.
Well, maybe when we do the next podcast, you can cheer people up a bit more rather than talking about people who've died.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
This is on the record.
But that's a bit of an anti-Northern story, isn't it? Because you're very anti-Northern.
I'm not anti-Northern. You accuse me of this all the time.
You are very
absolutely wrong. I have many, many friends in the North. Many
people. I
don't
think you do. I think you've got some friends in Scotland, which is another country.
No, I've loads of friends in Scotland.
And Wales, which
is another
country.
I also have friends in the North of England.
No,
and the people who understand me.
Where?
The people who understand me know that's where my heart is, in the whole of Britain.
Where are your friends in the North of England?
I'm not telling you where they are.
You haven't got me.
Yeah, I have. I've got more friends in the North than
I've
you've got.
I've known you 35 years. You've never mentioned a friend in the North
of
England.
Well, you
mentioned... You're lying.
No, you don't,
you're
no.
lying.
There's only one of us who's in here is a liar, right?
No, no.
We had this conversation a few weekends ago.
Not at all.
When you said to me, oh, I've known you 35 years, you've never told me you can play the violin.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, Popeye?
Yeah.
I can play the violin.
No, you can't.
Yes,
you said
I can.
You used to be able to play the violin, but you can't now.
Yeah, well...
I made a very good joke about that, didn't I?
Yeah, no, you didn't.
I said, you put a violin under your chin. Which of your chins would you put it under?
Considering that you've got the biggest fucking chin in Christendom.
Oh, that's very
I'm not quite surprised.
Show this, by the way.
No, this is not a family show.
Stop.
This is audio boom, and we can swear if we want.
And I said, you're in the restaurant, aren't you? I said, yeah. I said, but we've been sitting there for 25 minutes. I said, there's nobody else in the restaurant. And I said, we haven't seen our waitress. He said, oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we've closed the restaurant. I said, what are you talking about?
Well,
said,
since you got in there.
He said, we've closed the restaurant. I said, what are you talking about? I said, what about the waitress who took us our order?
Yeah.
He said, oh, I'm afraid she became very ill. We have to send her home. So we closed the restaurant. I said, but you didn't come in and tell us. Anyway, so my thinking is that if that's all you want in life, it's a bit like being a sort of hopeless drunk, isn't it?
The I don't know, what's you... that like?
I don't know, but what I'm saying
is... walked right into that one.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.